I was like so Midwestern when I moved out here at the end of 2023. Like I had three heads, like, oh God, I'm not in Kansas anymore.
Heather, I obviously invited you onto the show for specific reasons. You stood out to me because I see you being active on Noster and sharing different things, and you seem to be a real force for making some things happen. You offered some inspiration for Anna and I to get some things going, and I think we'll probably want to get into that, but I also just want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself however you feel called, kind of how you got into the space, a little short intro about how you got here, whatever you feel called to share.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to be on with Desert Dave. I'm Beyond Bitcoin. This is going to be a good time today. And I got into Noster at the end of 2023. Like I had created one, but I had let it go. And like, I didn't get it. I think you see this with a lot of people who get onto Noster. They come in, they poke around, and then they're like, this is dumb. And then they leave. But I came back because I got bored because I'd moved back to Arizona and my aunt was passing away. True story. And so I'd moved back for family purposes. But as my aunt was passing away, we hit that point, you know, when somebody's about to die and you can't leave the house, like we hit that point. And so we were all just kind of on our phones. And then my cousins were like getting drunk, and I'm a sober person. So I was like, I got to kill some time and hang around all these drunk people. So I found my nerd friends on Noster. And also part of moving across the country and then finding Noster was I had been living in Wichita, Kansas, and I used to get on Bitcoin Twitter every once in a while. I'd be like, hey, are there any Bitcoiners in Wichita? Like, does anybody want to come to a meetup or start a meetup? Or like, does anybody in Wichita give a shit about Bitcoin? And like, crickets. So then I came out here and we have Noster Phoenix out here, the Noster Phoenix crew with QW and Sam and Santos, and we're just a really small group, right? But we do have Noster Phoenix meetups. And so I was like, this is cool. Like I can do this Noster thing and entertain myself while my family member is dying. And then I also can just like, I can go to a meetup and finally meet like some fellow Bitcoiners, because like, hey, everybody on Noster is still a Bitcoiner. So that's kind of how I got into the space. And then like, I don't know, 63 different things happened from there.
When did you first get into Bitcoin space?
I got in 2020. I went to work in TV in January 2020. Now, this was also in Wichita, Kansas. And I'd been in news before. Like I worked at KFDI News in Wichita. I'd worked at Westwood One. Like I'd done news in all these places. So I was used to doing news. But 2020 was a little bit different. You know, I'd done elections since Bush was in office, you know, way back. And I'm going to date myself here, but I had done all that stuff before and then got into TV, and we had this pandemic. And so that's where I was kind of like, where's the off ramp to this world I do not like? Like, can I leave the country? Like, where's the reset button? You know, like, how do I get out of this world? You know, like, how did my family even end up in the United States? Because I want out now because this is ridiculous. I did not do well with the pandemic at all. Like mentally, emotionally, like I just did not understand. Fortunately, I did have the kind of job where you do always have to be outside the home, you know? So like I did have to go to work at the TV station every day, which was also really stressful because like we got quarantined all the time. If you had so much as a sniffle, you couldn't come to work. So we were doing like a lot of double shifts, and like I was producing two shows in a day a lot of the time. And so I was just really like, this is all bullshit. Like, where is the escape hatch? You know, like how do I get out of this kind of life? I didn't know what fiat was. I didn't know what Bitcoin was. And so I started to, because like all I could do was sit at home and like watch Bitcoin YouTube. I kind of got into Bitcoin Twitter and I got into Bitcoin YouTube, and I was watching Max and Stacy and I was watching Simply Bitcoin. And I was like, this is the answer to everything. And then like every Bitcoiner, like you go down the rabbit hole and like, this is everything that's wrong with my life and my world. Everything's fiat. And so like, the pandemic was kind of the forcing function that made me find Bitcoin. And also with all of that free time, like the only thing I did was I would go to Bible study on Zoom, and then I would like watch Bitcoin podcasts on YouTube, like every morning before work. And then I'd go to my little fiat, you know, quote unquote journalism job, and report the news and report how many people have COVID in the county now, how many cases do we have, 20,000 today. And, you know, it was a way to escape from the reality of the world while like looking at, okay, well, how do we build a Bitcoin reality? How do we, if this is the answer, how do I do this? And then I couldn't find people locally to do it with. So I moved back to Arizona, and then I found you guys eventually.
Yeah, it's a really interesting transition, kind of challenging in a lot of ways. It's like, it's such a beautiful thing, but that desire to be able to share and open people up and invite them into this new world is like, it's kind of isolating in a way that I find, because it's like, it's frustrating to feel like you have this gift to share, and but it's like we're all kind of outsiders. We're out here blazing this trail and wanting to see this new future, and it's like, wow, the tools are here, but how do we get to that future, to that real transition, to the paradigm shift? And for me, like, Noster has been, it's answered a lot of those questions for me, because it's like, you know, we have the money element, but we need like the social, the community aspects, and the mm-hmm. connections, and the new apps and the new decentralized platforms to interact with. And that's kind of where I want to focus in the conversation with this podcast, because there's so much talks about what's happening in the Bitcoin space, and a lot of people talking about price and when's this going to happen and who's buying what. And
yeah,
and I'm kind of like overhearing about that. And I kind of want to, you know, just imagine like we're fast forwarding a little bit and we're on the Bitcoin standard, and it's like, well, what are we going to build? How are we going to offer value to our fellow man? How are we going to mm-hmm. push ourselves and expand? And so, like I mentioned earlier, something that really drew me to you was the fact that you were doing these online yoga classes on Hive Talk, and you're the only person that was doing it. And I found it very inspirational, because it's like, I think that takes a lot of bravery to kind of like be the first to do something. And it's challenging, you know. Anna's been putting on classes for a few weeks now, and it's like,
yes,
we've had one person show up each time, which is like, you know, that's better
awesome.
Than better than nobody, right? So it's like, I do believe that, you know, if you build it, they will come. And mm-hmm. so I want to hear a little bit about your journey with yoga, because, and get into the beyond Bitcoin part of the conversation, and hear about kind of what yoga means to you, how you got drawn into it, what, you know, tell me a little bit about that part of yourself.
Yeah, so my yoga story starts in about 1996.
So awesome. We're
coming up on 29 years of yoga. So, and I'm like, I'm in my 40s, right? So I've been through a few seasons of life on this journey. Definitely the body's been through some different seasons, you know. There's been some injuries and illness where you obviously can't practice the on the mat yoga, you know, when you're missing when you've got like one leg that's out of commission, or you know, you nearly die from COVID and you can't do anything but like, you know, I used to like sit down on my mat and do neck rolls and be like, okay, I'm tired now and I'm not dead, this sucks, I'm done. So I've been through those different seasons. But when I started doing yoga in 1996, so I was a teenager and I was working, and there was nothing available, right? So like, I mean, like there was, I lived in the Bay Area, but I lived not in San Francisco. So in my little town, there was not a yoga studio. So it's not like it is today, where you can probably drive, even in Wichita, Kansas, we had yoga studios. Most places in the United States are going to have a yoga studio, and it's probably going to be, you know, full of young, skinny, flexible people, or, you know, people going to hot yoga. You get a lot of hot yoga. And so, but it's there. There are plenty of yoga studios, but in 1996, there was not. There was nowhere to go. So it was like this scenario we're just talking about, where like you want to meet people that are into the thing you're into, but you can't. So I got a book and I started doing yoga off of a book, and that was how my yoga practice began. And then I moved to Phoenix, Arizona in 2000, and suddenly I was somewhere that had yoga studios, like two yoga studios, but I went to them and went to classes and got to experience attending a yoga class and meeting other yoga students or dragging friends and family to go with me. Like, hey, we come to a yoga class with me because I'm tired of going by myself. And so like, I think even my mom, when my mother was alive, she actually came to a yoga class with me once. And she was like, this is really hard shit. I'm going to sit down on my mat now. Like, I'm never coming to this with you again. And so like, I was like, oh. And then it dawned on me that like, it was a different experience for different people, you know, like my mother experienced yoga in a different way from me. And I was like, this is cool. I would love to like keep doing this. So like, maybe I could help teach people yoga. And then I was like, wow, that costs thousands of dollars. I'm not going to do that. And so I eventually, the pandemic again changed everything for me in many, many ways. But I found an online way to do yoga teaching. I'd always wanted to do it and I could never do it because I worked in radio. So I always had to either get up at 4 a.m. to do a morning show, or I was working weekends. Like, there was just no way I could swing the schedule and the fee of taking a few thousand dollars of yoga teacher training, because I usually do it on Friday nights and then like Saturdays. So you like have to dedicate kind of your weekend to taking yoga teacher training. So the pandemic was good for me in this way, where I found an affordable online yoga teacher training. And one of my favorite yoga teachers at the same time also started an online off the mat kind of teacher, not a teacher training, but just like he started an online community from Phoenix, Arizona, oddly enough. I didn't live here at the time. So like I did like 3 years in that program just to do the off the mat yoga practice and just to kind of solidify what I knew about the yoga sutras and how to apply them. And there was a little bit of on the mat yoga too. And that place here in town is called Yogapura. And that teacher is Eric Wall Robinstein. And so that was really good for me too. So I kind of like doubled up on the yoga, and it was a very spiritual time for me during the pandemic. And that's kind of how I got here, to where I was like, well, this isn't the yoga teacher training I wanted, where I would be in person with other people. But it was a time when nobody was in person with other people. And so it just kind of worked out for me. And I was still working in TV at the time. So I'd be like practicing yoga in the TV newsroom and talking about yoga or Bitcoin with people in the TV newsroom, like a crazy person. They were just like, oh my God, what is she doing here? Like she does not fit here. But yeah, it was an unforgettable time to do yoga teacher training. And that's kind of how we got to where we are now, where I teach somewhat online and then also in person.
Yeah, it's interesting. You hear the story a lot of how the events of 2020 and around then, like you hear about the challenges and you also hear about like the transformation. And I think oftentimes, like when we go through big challenges, especially big collective challenges like that, it like helps put things into motion. It helps cause a shift. And I know for me, there was a catalyst to get me to leave my whole living situation and my business and everything. And it was kind of like, yeah, challenging, but it also kind of lit a fire under me to kind of get me moving. And so it's interesting that you were in yoga that long, and then it was that kind of got you to take it to another level. I could definitely get a sense participating in your class that you've been doing it for a while. Like it felt like, you know, like, cause I've been in yoga practices with, you know, several different teachers, and sometimes you get the feeling that someone just kind of ran through a training and just kind of wants to jump on a bandwagon. And sometimes you get the feeling that it's like, oh, it's like, I feel like it's an important practice to you and that you care more beyond, you know, because beyond the mat is really important in yoga, right?
Yeah. And I'm so anal retentive about everything. And I'm such a traditionalist too, to where like, you know, like I'm a Reiki master too, and I'm a traditionalist about that. And like, I will argue with people about what Reiki is supposed to be, and I'll argue with people about what yoga is supposed to be, because you do see a lot of people who've just gone through a training. Because there are so many online trainings now, there are so many trainings, period. I think the yoga market is flooded with teachers, and you really have to have kind of, I mean, it's not like you have to have so much experience, you know, like the yoga teacher training is 200 hours. I think the one I took has been ratcheted up to like 250 hours now. So like you can, at minimum, you're going to take 200 hours of training to do your yoga teacher training and get certified. And then there's all kinds of other things that you can do above that. And I do like the continuing education training all the time. Like I'm doing a women's health one right now so that I can learn about like yoga for women who've been through hysterectomies, you know, for example. And also like I'm a nerd for health stuff. I worked in the addiction field, so I love the anatomy stuff. I love emergency med. Like I love that anything anatomy, anything about bodies, you know, if there's blood and guts, like I love that kind of stuff, like that kind of medical stuff. So I'm into all of that, and I like to connect all that in yoga. And you know, yoga teacher training gives you that. Like it gives you basic anatomy, it gives you how to teach, it gives you like how to have a personal practice, you know, here's the yamas and niyamas, here's some Sanskrit, here's how to do this and teach students. But I think you really, there's really no way to prepare somebody to just like graduate a class and teach yoga. You kind of have to do it. And that's what I did too. Like I had a room that I rented in Wichita at White Dove, which is a metaphysical bookstore and yoga studio. It was the original yoga studio of Wichita too. Dale, who owns it and runs it, is in his 70s now. He still teaches yoga. He was the first guy to do yoga in Wichita, and he doesn't really do teacher trainings. You know, but he was a mentor to me, obviously, as I was renting a room in a store and offering Reiki sessions. And so then as I was doing my yoga teacher training during the pandemic, I would go to Dale and I'd be like, hey, I need some help with my class. You know, will you help me out? And so he'd help me out. He'd give me advice. And he's just a great, great person. And Dale told me one of the things that I would never forget. He said, like, I was like, is it normal to be nervous about teaching yoga? And he'd be like, yeah, you know, I felt like a total nervous wreck for the first 2 years that I taught yoga. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is normal. And, you know, and he's taught at a very small, you know, location. I think to this day, he's got like, he can accommodate maybe like 6 students in a class at one time. So his classes are really small. He was the, I think he taught one other person in Wichita how to teach yoga. But there's no easy way to prepare people to do it. You just kind of do it. And it comes together over time. Like I know it has for me. So I like when you have people who are just like kind of starting out, and I think especially coming out of the pandemic where I was teaching at a time when, or I started teaching at a time when there was really a lot going on in person. And like our yoga studio, it was one of the places where you could go and you could practice yoga and not have to wear a mask during yoga class. So I think that actually helped him survive during the pandemic as well.
Yeah, I would think so. I know for me in that time, I found it very frustrating because I have a hard time doing what others tell me to do, and I don't like I don't like rules, and it never made much sense to me. I was never afraid of it or anything, so to me it was all a big joke always. And it was like that was a tough time to try to like be forced into a you know, a round hole as a square peg. And so I'm curious, how much do you feel that, as far as teaching goes, how much do you feel like the yoga teacher training specifically prepared you versus just having many years of your own practice and research?
Well, it's a different thing to like bend your brain around, because it's like when you're teaching yoga, you can't have your personal practice. You know, like for example, I love my fitness tracker app and everything, but I don't turn it on when I teach yoga, because it's like one more thing to remember, but it's not my practice, you know. And also, well, yoga is not really fitness anyway, it's yoga. But you know, I think you really, you don't know what you're going to encounter. You know, like my first yoga teaching job was at a place where I had been going for 10 years and was very comfortable. And I knew people and it was like, no big deal. Just walk in there and teach yoga. And I used that for like my graduation project. And then everybody was like, well, when's the next class? And I was like, I don't know. And Dale's like, whenever you want. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll come back and we'll do it next Saturday again. And they were like, yay. So that's how that came to be. And then I moved to Phoenix and it's a totally different market. Totally different kinds of yoga students. You know, like here, everybody expects like a cacao ceremony and a sound bath. And, you know, it's very, it was very much like that. Like I rented a space downtown when I moved here, and it was at a place called Urban Wellness, and I rented a Reiki room. And I realized really, really quickly, if I wanted to teach yoga, that I would have to also do the janitorial work. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, and I'm renting a room here to offer Reiki sessions. And this is a different clientele, obviously, from Wichita. It's not that I didn't think it would be, but like, that's one of the things that you're not kind of prepared for, is like, especially if you're going to travel around or be nomadic or just move, like I did, you're not prepared for like, here's what yoga is going to be like in a major city versus a small town. Or like, there's just, I think it's almost impossible to prepare individuals for what to expect, you know? So I had to kind of learn that like the clientele wanted a certain thing here. And so I was like, hey, do I offer that thing? Should I try online? Which is kind of like, you know, because I'm not a cacao ceremony person. Like I've never been to one. You know, and there's certainly like, you can, you know, find 40 people offering one anywhere you go here. And also the same thing with the sound baths. Like this is what the market wants. That's not who I am. Again, I'm a traditionalist, whether it's Reiki or yoga, we're going to do the traditional Reiki. We're going to do the traditional yoga. So I think that that's one of the things they don't prepare you for, is the business aspect of it, and like know your market and do that market research and stuff. So that was kind of some of the things that I had to learn the hard way.
Yeah, I think there's a real challenge of like, I find this challenge for myself, that's like sharing the things that I want to share, following my passions and figuring out how to make that work for myself in terms of the getting my needs met. You know, that energy exchange, mm-hmm. because I'm not a businessman. I mean, I had a business in the past and I kind of left that behind to kind of do my own thing. And it's like, mm-hmm. there's so much that I want to share kind of in the healing space that it doesn't feel like there's a lot of a market for it right now. And it's, you know, I feel that challenge, but I think that it's so important to share what we're sharing. 'Cause like, to me, like, so I've kind of been like I've participated in yoga practices off and on like over the years, but I've never had like my own solid practice or anything. I've just kind of had it in my periphery, like known people or whatever. So it's like been around, but I've always been very like fascinated by it. There's always like something that's kind of drawn to me. And I see it as like a very powerful practice in terms of getting us centered in our mind, body, spirit connection, which, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of bring it back to Bitcoin, it's like, I think there's a lot of levels to this stuff, because there's, you know, there's number go up technology. There's people that want to, you know, speculate and get rich or whatever. But then there's the people that really want to integrate. I think Bitcoin's a teacher, and the real mm-hmm. lessons are like for us to find our passion, to find what helps us lead with our heart, and what do we have to share with the world. And I think that yoga is it seems to be an amazing practice to kind of help us understand ourselves and understand our bodies and make that connection to get back into the present moment, which seems to me to kind of be like what all these teachings seem to, you know, come back to, is like, how do we live in the now? How do we have gratitude for where we are now and kind of get out of the monkey mind of what could happen mm-hmm. later? So to shift from fear to love, yoga seems like a beautiful practice for that. And there's, you know, depending on, I've seen a lot of different classes, and some of it's like strictly like a fitness thing. Like you just see people like that are just there to do a workout, and it's like, it's cool. But, and that's something I really appreciate about you and Anna, is that both you guys seem to really like, understand like the deeper aspects of it and to care about that like continued journey, because it's a deep rabbit hole, right? Like of never ending kind of like self-exploration. And I appreciate
that. I teach some of those like those fitness classes, because I work for a company and we go out and we teach classes at luxury properties, right? So like you never know who's going to show up. It could be one person or nobody, or it could be like seven people and their house guests. Like I have no idea, but they're looking for fitness, you know, because most of what the company teaches is like fitness classes, which I don't know how I would teach like a cardio kickbox class when like we're going out to luxury properties that don't have punching bags and focus mitts and things that I would use to teach. Like, how do I, because like you, it's the same thing as like when I'm teaching yoga on Noster, and like, I don't know if you guys have anything other than a yoga mat, or even if you have a yoga mat, you know, but everybody shows up with what they've got. And so like these luxury properties don't have, for being luxury properties, they don't have like mats. Well, one does, but they don't have like blocks, and they don't have straps or blankets or bolsters and like all the yoga props. So I have to teach without yoga props and kind of be creative with how I do yoga, considering that like, well, nobody can grab a block or a strap, you know? So that's like one thing with where it's like, okay, so if I make it not about like fitness, and then I ask people kind of what they want, like, what do you want to get out of this class today? And like, usually I swear across, maybe it's me, I don't know, maybe it's what I attract in, but across the board, people are always like, I'm stressed out, I need to stretch, I need to relax, I need to calm down. Like, nobody's like, yeah, I want to work out. Everybody's like, I want to chill. This life is hard, man. Like people come in looking like I just want to go to yoga class, and I need to stretch, everything hurts. And I'm like, okay, this is where we are. And I've also noticed over the years, a lot, most people are really inflexible. Oh my God. Like we work on computers all day, you know, and then like people don't have wrist strength and lower arm strength to do some of the things, and people will literally be in pain trying to do some basic poses sometimes. And it's like, and they'll want to stretch, and it's like, this is not a stretching problem, this is a strength problem. You've got to build strength. You're sitting for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week with a mouse in one hand. Like, this is the problem. You lack strength. It's not a dexterity or flexibility issue. And like that always fixes it for people, but they, you know, we have to figure this out. These are the things that we're learning the hard way now, is like people are very like, you don't have to be flexible to be in shape. But and yes, in the chat, Mr. Orange says, I'm chronically inflexible. It makes yoga difficult. Yes, it does. But yoga is not about that. It's the journey to get there that's important. And usually when like I get contracted to go out and teach a class, you know, at a luxury property, it's not about that journey where you're like, so I always try to kind of reiterate to people without too much of like the dogma, not too much Sanskrit, I'm learning how to kind of like fit in like the yogic lessons, you know, things from the sutras without sitting there reading a sutra to people. And I'm learning how to get those things into a yoga class. So it's not just like, hey, we're here, we're going to work our abs for 20 minutes and then we're going to do this and da, 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 da. It's like, how can I make this the yoga that I received from my teachers to where yoga is a tool and it is kind of a manual for living. It's also kind of a science that actually freaking works and has for thousands of years. How do I get that to people who are like, I'm here to do a plank?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really beautiful. I appreciate everything you're saying. And that's definitely been my impression as I learn more about it. I learned so much from Anna because she, like I said, she takes it very seriously and she does the deeper learning. And it's a beautiful thing. And I just would love to see more people get involved. I think that often people, you know, I know for me in 1996, I didn't even know what yoga was. And and then when I did know about it, you know, there's this story around it that's like, oh, that's for women, or that's for this or that. But it's right. Like, but once I started doing it, it's like, holy crap, like I got some work to do. And
yeah, dudes always come to class and they're like, I'm inflexible, I've got upper body strength. And I'm like, okay, yeah. Bet.
Yeah, right. And there's like, you know, everyone should do whatever they want. But for me, I'm finding that the more I like participate, the more I like want to expand those boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I really do love the aspect of stillness. I think there's something mm-hmm. like we all like tend to be so distracted. So I like a practice like yours that has a lot of, it's very inviting to a lot of different people. It's not like incredibly difficult. It's not pushing anything too hard, but it does ask people to kind of slow their minds down and just be with the breath, mm-hmm. which by the way, like to me, just following a yoga practice and trying to keep the flow and think about my breath is so much. So I really admire you mm-hmm. guys for like doing that while you're telling people what to do. And I can see why your practice would be very different than instructing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. When like, I'm teaching, like the brain is moving 100 miles an hour. And like, and like Dan can vouch for me with this. I'll tell you left, right. I'll say the wrong body part. Like it's kind of hilarious. It's for your entertainment too, by the way. I'll be like, move your right shoulder to your right knee, or and like, I'll totally not mean that, but it comes out and then it's kind of funny. And you guys get some free entertainment out of that. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, we got to keep it real, and I appreciate what you do in that space, and definitely keep it up. And I kind of want to shift gears because there's another thing that mm-hmm. you are involved in that I'm really curious about. I want to learn more about, and we haven't talked about it, but I'm very passionate about music, and I'm very curious, awesome. Like, how do we get from this place where we are now? Like, there's this old, you know, like we've all seen things like change since, you know, or, you know, some of us are older or younger than others. But I remember like when you had to get a figure out a way to get a record deal, and then like you either made it or you didn't make it. And now we're kind of like in the digital world where like there's a lot of different niches for music. So like, which is beautiful. But how do we mm-hmm. get people the value directly? How do we connect them with the audience? And we have, I know I'm familiar with Wavelake as a platform, which seems very promising, but it seems like mostly what you see on there is just kind of, what am I trying to say? Like, how do we get, like, how does that transition? How do you see that happening? Like, what do you do in that space? Just talk about that kind of value music space, because I want to learn about that.
Yeah, it's a good question. It is going to take a while. We've kind of concluded that because it's a big change. You know, one of the things I've been looking at a lot lately is the absolute vice grip that Spotify has on music. You know, we use that cancel Spotify hashtag a lot on Noster and Twitter.
I'm all about like it.
Oh man, like the data I have found lately is like Spotify's it. Like it beats everything. And I've been writing a piece that I haven't published yet about, you know, aren't we all tired of subscriptions yet? But the answer is no. I mean, if you look at the data, I totally am. Like, I'm always looking for more because we're Bitcoiners. We don't want to pay for shit. You know, we want to stack. We don't want to waste money. We have a different consciousness. But the world still loves monthly subscriptions for music, and especially Spotify. The data backs it up, and that drives me crazy. And it's like, well, we never were trying to be the next Spotify. You know, the value for value people, like we all hate Spotify. We all want to get rid of it, but it's going to take a sea change to even come close. Right. So because we're looking at like, you probably have less than I'm guessing there are fewer than 2000 artists who have jumped into the value verse, you know? So you got Wavelake, you got Fountain, you got Ellen Beats, you got, you know, podcasts that people can put your music on. Not very many podcasts, right? You know, the technology doesn't always work. You know, like we've all had problems with all of these apps. You know, they're still being built. We're still building the solutions. So, you know, the solutions exist and they're going to only get better. And we have a lot of growing pains. But for this first couple thousand people who are jumping in and they're getting their music in the Valueverse, or maybe they're doing a show and it's broadcast on Toonster, and, you know, maybe even Zapstream, you know, Toonster being a fork of Zapstream, and maybe they're, you know, seeing music as something that they could actually profit on for a change. Because if you've been on Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal, you know, you may, if you've received anything from that, you know, you've probably received maybe a dollar. And I think Sarah Jade tells a great story on the second episode of Radio Detox, where she talks about like getting a check for like $1.30 or something from Spotify. So like anything you make above a dollar, you're winning, right? So like it's kind of like the problem that we have right now is we're still having to kind of explain like, okay, here's value for value. Here's the world of apps that we use. They don't always work great. You know, maybe the wallet gets shut down. Maybe you lose your NPub, like, or you lose your secret key to get into your NPub. Like there's still some problems in the space. So where do I see it going? It's easier to say like, where is it not going? So like right now, what friends and I are working on is just trying to onboard people, trying to get people to understand it. And like, what you see is that like an artist will open up and they'll get a Nostr account, and maybe they'll even put some music on one of these apps, you know, like Wavelake, or it'll be in RSS. So it'll be on Ellen Beats, but, or maybe it'll be on all of them because they go to the trouble to release it on all of them. And then they open up an NPub, and then they start posting on the NPub. And then you see like, maybe they get like 20 followers on Nostr, and then they kind of bounce. And I think, again, this is the typical Nostr experience, right? Where you get into it, you hear a lot about it, you sign up for it, and then you go, what do I do here? How do I find people? Are people interacting with me? Is anybody seeing this? You know, hello, crickets. I have 20 followers. Okay, I guess I'll go back to Instagram. You know, because maybe I've got 1,000 followers there. And maybe those people buy tickets to my show, or maybe they interact with me there. Maybe they send me a DM asking about tickets for my next show, you know, and it's just kind of like for artists, they still have to be on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook and blah, 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 blah. And then we throw one more thing at them like Nostr, and it's got to pay off. And I don't think we're at that point where it's paying off for people, although you do see this with a few artists. You do see a few artists gaining traction, like man, like Quex, like Joe Martin, like Ainsley Costello. So the question becomes, how do we replicate this success? And then if we get an artist who does a Toonster show and they're doing a Toonster live stream, and then like we teach them about value for value, and then we teach them the receptive, and they learn about Nostr. And then they see how the whole thing works, because they do the show and they're on the stage and they see the TVs that we have out in front of the stage. So they're seeing the sats flow in, and then the show's over, and then they get the equivalent of a paycheck, right? So like Toonster sends money to their Bitcoin wallet. So then they see they've got some money in the Bitcoin wallet. We did this in December when we did Sats by Southwest. And then we did this show at Antone's the next day, where we had the FM Rodeo, their local band in Austin. They did the show, and it was cool because it was Johnny, who I talked to most of the time there, was all about it. And then I never got to talk to the bassist, Marshall. While we were in Austin, I never talked to him. I never got a chance to talk to him. I couldn't even have picked him out of a crowd. I come back to Phoenix from Austin. This is where I live. And Johnny's like, hey, can you talk to my bassist? He's going to be in Scottsdale doing a show Friday night. This is the same week we did the Austin show. So I'm like, hell yeah. I go out to the bar, and I go meet with Marshall, and he's like, this is this thing that you guys did with the crypto. It's really cool. And so then I'm at a bar with a bunch of people talking about crypto, and I'm like, well, let me explain Bitcoin, and let me explain value for value, and let me see like what you saw. And what Marshall saw was sats coming across the screen. And then when FM Rodeo did the show, you know, Toonster pays FM Rodeo. So he's like, we earned money from that show. Like, oh my God, we earned money for doing that show in Austin. He's like, let me tell you, I'm about to go on tour with this other band, and I'm going to get paid X amount of dollars. And then they had this elaborate thing going on where one of the bands that he's in, like three bands, right? So there's like FM Rodeo in Austin, and then there's two more bands, including one that just played out here for Arizona Bike Week to open up for Stone Temple Pilots, his band King Cherry. They're pretty successful locally for a new band. And he's like, you know, we do this thing where like we sell broken cymbals and we sell them for like $100 and fans buy them. And then they've gotten some radio airplay out here, which is cool because I worked in radio out here. So like I know how hard that is for a band to get airplay anywhere, let alone in like the fifth largest city in America. So he starts like going, oh my God, like this could help us fund a tour for one band. And then do we have to keep selling merch and broken cymbals that we sign or this, that, and the other. And the light turned on for him. And this is, you know, since December that he and I have kind of talked off and on about getting him in the Valueverse. And we haven't gotten any of the bands in the Valueverse yet, except for FM Rodeo, which you can listen to. They're in the Valueverse. And so you can listen to FM Rodeo, but the other two bands haven't been onboarded yet because it's a process. Because this is actually, I would say, a pretty successful band here in town. King Cherry is actually, they've been working on an EP, so they've been recording. You got band members actually touring. Then they're playing Bike Week with Stone Temple Pilots. So they're doing really well, and they also have to have, like, they've got so much going on. Like, I'm watching them. They had people film them at Bike Week when they're opening up for Stone Temple Pilots. So then they've got to have somebody edit that video and put it out for them and put it out, you know, like on social media. And so like they're busy with all this shit and they haven't had time to wrap their brains around like actually getting their new music into the Valueverse. Cause right now they're just trying to record it and get it out. So like, that's kind of the perfect like use case of like, here's somebody who's just working their ass off. They've got a day job. They're in three bands. They're trying to figure out how to make money. They're trying to figure out how to do a tour because they're still ensconced in the traditional system. You know, they're still putting music on Apple, iMusic, whatever it's called now, Apple Music. They're putting music on Spotify, the whole thing. You know, you're doing the DistroKid thing. Your music's getting out there. You're not making money from people listening to your music on music apps in that system. You're making a little bit of money if you're doing a show at a bar or at Bike Week. So you're making a little bit of money that way. And then you got to sell merch. So like these people are working full-time jobs and then they're doing their music on the nights and weekends and recording an EP and having videos edited. And like all of this stuff is going on all at once. And it's kind of bananas because like we could probably help them fund this as soon as they get some music out. King Cherry is a great, great rock band. And so like as soon as the music comes out and it's on the apps so that we can zap it, and we get them on Nostr because they're not on Nostr yet. So if we get them on Nostr and we can zap their content there, some money can start pouring in, you know, and it's not going to be much. You know, it's not going to be paying the rent. It's, you know, they're not going to be taking off and going to Maui on vacation, but they're going to have to, like, I think, slave and slog through just a little bit less, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, That's great to hear about. I mean, it's an absolute perfect example of, you know, that's just one of the many different ways that artists are going to be connecting directly with the people, which I see as like the biggest thing about Nostr is like, it's going to help us get back to providing value where we should be providing value, where our passion, where our heart is. And you know, and it may start out as not much, but the thing is if once we integrate what Bitcoin is about and we start to understand that it's like, this is about a return to like living more sustainably and simply and abundantly, and your money that you hold on to, assume, you know, to me, Bitcoin is money, real money. It holds value over time, which is like you can't like, that is such a profound shift that people just can't even begin to wrap their heads around. Like, it's just like a known thing that like, oh well, you have to make more than you used to or else you're gonna starve. And that that's the big shift, is that a shift into abundance mindset and like getting out of like, oh, I have to have more because I'm not going to have enough later. And it's awesome to hear that you're working on that stuff. You know, I think that really good things take time to grow, grassroots movements. You know, it's like the internet. Like, who owns the internet? You know, it's just an organic thing, and it's going to grow naturally. I think it's really inevitable, but it's so cool to hear about, you know, the people on the front lines making it happen.
It's so grassroots right now. Like, that's one of the things that has been so hard is, like, Julie at Phantom Power Music has been trying to onboard people and meet people in network, and she's doing a great job of it. However, it sucks her time. So, like, a lot of what Julie does, like, she'll get on the phone with, like, somebody like Marshall or Zoom or whatever, and she talks to artists, and it's like a 3-hour conversation, because you kind of have to explain to the artist, okay, you got to understand Bitcoin. And then this works with wallets. And then there's, like, if you're talking about podcasts specifically, we're talking about wallet switching technology. So we got to educate people on all of these things. And then there's the concept of value for value. And we talk about, you know, the 1,000 true fans concept, where if you have 1,000 true fans and every single one of those fans manages to spend $100 a year on your music, then you end up making $100,000 a year, so you can pay for your life, right? So then you're explaining that concept. And then they're like, well, what's Noster? Because Noster is part of this ecosystem and another way to promote to Bitcoiners that you have music. And then we have to explain, okay, and so then we also do shows with Toonster. So let's explain
what's live streaming. Toonster? I'm not familiar with Toonster.
Toonster is Toonster.io. So, like, Toonster, like Noster. So, like, TUNESTR.io. So Toonster is the technology. It's a fork of Zapstream. So if anybody's been to Zaps.stream, it's like the Noster answer to YouTube. So, like, why should I be on Toonster rather than YouTube? Because, well, everything live streams now, right? Even Substack. So the thing that is the difference is the fact that Toonster is a way to watch a live act. And while they're performing, you can zap the artist, and whoever's on stage receives that Bitcoin. So we did this last week with the Launch Music Festival in Pennsylvania. And it was Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It was a 3-day music fest. So 3 days of artists. Ainsley played Friday night, but it was mostly not even just local artists. It was just a big, like, a 3-day music festival in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, with a bunch of independent artists. And every time they went on stage and people were zapping, that's right, Dan, repping Pennsylvania. Every time an artist is on stage, whatever you zap is going to go to that artist. So if you like a band and you send them 2,000 sats, you know, like, let's say that's the equivalent to $2. It's not, it's a little bit less than that today. Bitcoin's at 93K. So that artist makes a couple bucks there. And so the idea being that there's enough of us who are fans, right, who are watching and zapping to where that act actually makes maybe, you know, a few $100,000. I think down the road, as this thing grows and we keep doing this, then you'll have so many people watching on Toonster. This is the goal anyway. This is the dream. So many people are watching. Yeah, like you have maybe not just like tens or hundreds of people in Toonster in the chat zapping, but like maybe thousands of people. Maybe a band does have 1,000 fans watching, and everybody gives, you know, $10, and like, you make some good money. And if you're a band of, you know, 4 people, you split it 4 ways. And then it's like, oh, hey, we made more money doing a show than we normally would have. So like, my first entry into doing it was here in Phoenix. We did a show in February of 2024. We called Culture Shock. It was the Noster Phoenix, I don't know, show that we did. And Sarah Jade came out and performed. So it was just her. She has a band and everything. But for that weekend, she and her husband drove out. And he plays guitar and she plays keytar. So she sings and they play. And so the two of them earned about $750 to play 30 minutes of their music at our show, and it was live on Toonster, and people zapped it, and so they made this like $750 for 30 minutes of playing all original songs. It wasn't cover songs or anything. It was her original work. And so I think Bitcoin was like 50 grand at the time, maybe somewhere around there. And so like, that would obviously be worth, you know, twice that now. So they made a pretty, you know, decent stack. And, you know, that's the kind of thing where it's like, cool, she drove from San Diego to Phoenix to do that. The two of them made some good money, and like people from all over the world zapped and sent money in on Toonster. So, you know, it was super fun because we had people at the show live, you know, not a huge operation, man. Like it was like maybe 30 of us, you know, in that room at that venue. And then who knows how many people are watching online, but the idea being that you can maybe replicate this success over time to where, you know, and mind you, like we're not promoting the hell out of these shows. We're talking about them on Noster, maybe a tweet on Twitter, X or whatever it's called now. So mostly like the Noster community is supporting these shows, like Bitcoiners who are on Noster, who know how to zap with a wallet are supporting these shows. So at some point it would expand, hopefully, as each band comes into the Valueverse, you know, there's sort of a burden of, okay, now bring your fans over from Instagram and teach them how to zap and, you know, teach them about Bitcoin and zapping with a wallet so that they can zap your content on Noster and then zap Toonster, you know, live performances. And maybe the fans are so into you that they learn that there's other stuff going on and they can listen to podcasts that are value for value. And then maybe they can watch other bands perform on Toonster and it's value for value. And we just kind of organically grow this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's beautiful. And I also think it's inevitable because Bitcoin and Noster, they're kind of tricky to get started, but they're very sticky. Like once you get it, you get it. And it's like, I mean, for me, it's like, there's no reason why I would go anywhere else. Why would I try to, I'm kind of lucky because I've never been super into Instagram or Twitter or anything. I've never had any traction anywhere. So I didn't have that burden of trying to feel like I needed to try to pull from my old life into the new thing. But it's like, this is the first time I felt like it's been like there's a place where I feel willing to share myself because I feel like there's actually something to it. Like there's something behind it.
Yeah. And like it pays off.
People that get into the Bitcoin space and the Noster space, like eventually it's going to stick and it's only going to continue to grow. And things like Instagram and YouTube and Spotify, they're only getting worse. And people are only getting more frustrated with algorithms or people being silenced or ghost banned or whatever. It's interesting how many people end up in the Noster space that, you know, are kind of just there because they got banned from some other place. And it's an interesting thing to watch unfold to see how I think all roads lead to this, you know, to this path. And it's just exciting. I mean, because really a lot of what you're sharing about is like new information to me. I, you know, like I said, I've checked out Wavelake a little bit, but I'm pretty unfamiliar with how this, the musical aspect is unfolding. But it sounds like it's got some pretty good momentum. And the and the grassroots word of mouth open source thing is just, it's kind of amazing. It's like, like all these people building all these different forks of things and utilizing these different sites, like that is so beautiful. And that's the way it should be. Like information should be free. And I just don't see any way that this train is going to lose steam. It's really just kind of how and when. And you know, I think something that a lot of Bitcoiners have in common is that we're practicing a lot of patience. I've been in the space for like 8 years now, and it was kind of like, oh, when is it going to be $1 million? You know, like, and the reality is like the slower, the better, because we want to build like a quality base of people. And people that kind of make that hurdle into the like denominating in sats and that value for value, people that are able to make that shift, they end up being like fairly high quality individuals, in my opinion, like fairly intelligent and like creative and just it's really exciting. You're getting me excited hearing about this stuff. Really looking forward
Everyone's building. I mean, that's the thing too, is like you probably aren't going to gain, if you never gained traction on the legacy social platforms before, you're definitely not going to now. It does require quite a lot of mental gymnastics to master those algorithms, which are constantly shifting and changing. Whereas you go back to Noster and it's back to like 2007 Twitter again, where everything's a chronological feed and you just kind of
I remember when you could use different apps to access Twitter. Like I had some random app. It wasn't even an official Twitter app, and that's like seems like such a strange idea now.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, like when they get it, you know, when you grasp it and you it works for you and you realize that like, oh, these are like real people. Like I can meet these people at a meetup or a conference, you know. It's like, do we all know each other from conferences? Probably, you know, like it kind of turns into that, which is cool too. And it's like, you just kind of realize that we're such a, maybe we're a small microcosm of the internet and finance right now, because we're like Bitcoin Noster people, but we all kind of know each other or are connected to each other now in some kind of way. And that's kind of cool too. And, you know, you start to meet, you know, some people who are like, well, hey, tell me about Noster. What do you guys do with that? And it's like, well, we're glad you asked. Like, we're doing a lot. We're doing music. We're doing yoga. People are doing Puff Puff Paint. You know, there's, you can, if you want to do Corny Chat and do Puff Puff Paint, or you want to come to yoga class on Hive Talk, you got two yoga teachers now. Oh, you like music? We've got that. You know, we've got Toonster. We've got Wavelake. We've got, you know, people are just posting videos of them playing too. You know, like that's the, we have people coming in and bringing the content so that it's beyond Bitcoin. You know, it's not just people talking about Bitcoin all the time, 24/7, although we all do love it. Like we all do. If you're going to do the Bitcoin, I think you got to have a life too. Like, what is the point of all this Bitcoin and all this stacking, all this mindset shift, if you're not also enjoying life? And like, to me, that means like yoga, music, you know, maybe reading like non-Bitcoin books. I know that's a kind of wild idea.
Well, I think the big shift is like figuring out where to offer value and being part of that Bitcoin circular thing. Like I used to think a lot about like, oh, how am I going to get enough Bitcoin by this time or whatever? And now it's like, I mine a little bit and I sell it and I zap people. It comes and it goes, mm-hmm. but I'm part of that world like more than I ever have been. And doing things like this podcast and Anna and you guys doing yoga and the other things we mm-hmm. want to offer and making Bitcoin part of it, that's the key, is like, how do we offer things for that direct exchange and cut out the people that have been cutting out a piece of our, what should be ours, rightfully ours. Like, there's no reason why we need individuals taking a cut of everything we do. Like, we have this, like look YouTube. At websites like this that people basically build for free, and you don't even have to sign up, and you can just come have a comp. Like, that is amazing. And so the tools are there. It's just like, man, just how do we, you know, get people there?
How do we get people to care? Like, somebody said in the chat, we are so early. It's funny because that's kind of how I ended up doing yoga on Noster. I was like, if I'm going to preach value to value for artists, because I can kind of see around the bend, like, I know this is going to fucking work. It's going to take off. I worked in radio. I get it. I've seen the problem. I contributed to the problem as a music radio person. You know, I want to fix this. I want to set it right, because I was part of the problem. Believe me, I spent a lot of record label money back in the day, and I spent it on drugs and alcohol. Okay, I did it. Been there, done that. So like, if I want to set this right and I'm going to preach value for value, then like, I actually need to put my money where my mouth is. And I was like, well, I suck at music. Like, I can play, but I can't play like an artist, right? So like, but I can teach yoga. So I can teach yoga value for value. So like, let's take that for a spin and see what I can learn from that. Because if artists are just look at me like, well, who the fuck is she? Why is she telling me to do value for value? Like, what does she know about it? She's not an artist, you know? So, what I am is a yoga teacher, and, I can tell you that value for value is actually really fun, because yes, you get to have a one-to-one relationship with your yoga students. So like, if you're a musician, you have a one-to-one relationship with your fans, and they're going to send you value. So they're going to send you some Bitcoin to a wallet, which is really cool. It's like, what I've learned from this is like, there are people who are going to show up every week and zap you for that yoga class, right? Just like, if you probably like look at Noster any day, you might see somebody, you know, publicly zapping a song on Wavelake. Right. I do that a lot, just, you know, to share music and hope hopefully people discover it and run with it. And, you know, so there are always going to be people who attend your class and don't pay, which is also the same as there are real life value for value situations where you can teach yoga by donation and people either show up or they don't, and they either pay or they don't. Somebody's going to give you $20. Somebody's going to give you $5. So it kind of like evens out, right? Like, but you end up earning money. Like you end up like showing up, meeting people, building community. You're going to make some money, right? Like something is going to come in where, like, by contrast, at the same time that I started teaching yoga on Noster back in September, I had also signed up for a yoga teacher platform off of the normie internet somewhere. It was, you know, like Noster, something new with a lot of problems, right? It still has problems. But I have made zero there. Like I will upload yoga videos there and meditation videos there, and nobody watches because nobody can find them. And to pay me, they have to pay the company, and then the company, you know, charges them. It has been a subscription fee, but they're going to change the pricing structure so that the yoga teachers can charge what we want to charge students. So I'm like, cool, I'm not going to charge anybody shit for right now because I don't know if there's a point. Nobody's watching my stuff, right? But then once you pay the platform, the money has to come back to us with Stripe. And if you've never used Stripe before, let me tell you how Stripe works. The more money you make through Stripe, the more money Stripe takes. So if you don't make a lot of money, Stripe's kind of cool because it doesn't take that much. But as you start to earn more money through Stripe, the chunk starts to look like really gnarly. And you know, the same thing with Square. Like I get it. Like all of these companies are not free, right? They're going to take their chunk. So like I try to use ZapRite as much as I can because for one simple fee, I get to actually keep most of the money that I charge people. So like, that's cool. So, but at the same time, I started teaching yoga on Noster, which I think all of us here understand the lightning rails and the Bitcoin earnings and how that works. But then I also started on this legacy platform at the same time. And it's just, I've gained no traction there. I don't understand the algorithm. I'm back in the making a thumbnail game where like, oh, if I make this thumbnail, will people watch the video? You know, if I use this keyword, will people watch the video? And then like, well, if I get paid, it'll be once a month through Stripe. So I don't get all of the money. Stripe gets the cut. So, you know, it's kind of proven to me that like, okay, if you stick with the legacy platforms, you're going to get wrecked. If you do the Bitcoin Noster thing, you're actually going to make some money. And it didn't even have to be this one new yoga platform, which I do like. And it believe me, like they don't charge me to be there for a yoga teacher. And so they're supplying me with the ability to not have to pay for a tech stack of Zoom, taking payments, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, if I get on YouTube, okay, has anybody ever tried to grow a yoga channel on YouTube? You know, like, because I have, and I uploaded a bunch of videos and got some views. You don't make any money unless you hit certain, you know, goalposts. Like you have to have, and they keep changing it over the years too, right? So like you had to have X amount of followers or X amount of views, and now you don't, but now you have to have this. And then, well, you know, if you say the wrong thing, like if you talk about astrology or mention the word COVID, you're going to get shadow banned. So like you can build and build and build, but if you say the wrong thing at any time, you get kind of shadow banned. So then you could be, you know, close to hitting whatever goal you need to be in order to monetize, but you may not get there because a lot of health kind of content, like if I talk about Reiki, astrology, or health, there's a good chance I'm probably going to get shadow banned on YouTube. I don't have those problems on Noster.
Yeah, because it's actually open and for the people. I mean, it's a remarkable paradigm shift. It's kind of like, you know, I could sit up thinking about all the possibilities all night. It's really just like, mm-hmm. There's so many opportunities. It's like, well, dang, where do I start? And it's just it's a beautiful transition. I'm super excited for it. And I really appreciate you sharing these different aspects that you're working on to kind of help make this future come to fruition. That's what this show is about, is like, what do we do now? It's like, okay, we have the tools. What are we building now? Let's stop talking about the tools and let's like put a foot forward and like figure out what it is that we have to share. What value can we offer? With that, I'd like to open it up for questions in the chat. I don't know if anyone that's been listening has anything that they want to ask Heather about, or myself, preferably Heather. I don't want to answer any questions, but
we all know I'm good at talking, though. That's just the teacher gift.
It's not a required questionnaire. It's just optional. You know, I'm just throwing it out there. I want the show to be kind of like, I want the live experience to be interesting and to have some interaction.
Look at
Heather.
Dan,
who is your
hey.
Favorite yoga? Obviously, Dan, right?
Obviously, Dan. Dan is.
I mean, he showed up today, so that's so he's
of course.
My
you know what?
Because sure.
Dan actually started there's a Yogastir community, Nostr and Pub. So like anything that gets tagged with Yogastir, like hashtag Yogastir, Dan's probably going to repost it at some point. Like, so he's promoting the yoga stuff that Anna and I are doing, and you know, any other yoga teacher who comes along. Oh, Crypto Cranium has a question too.
Yeah, a question about her life journey. Any specific questions, or you just want to hear the whole, you just start at the beginning? We heard a little
bit
early on.
I've shared a lot of life. In my 40-something years of life, there's been like, I had like 8 or 10 careers. I don't know, any specific question about my life journey, because it's been a weird one.
Yeah. Most of us have had a weird life, I would say. People are weird. That's been my experience.
We're weird people. Bitcoiners are weird. Nostriches are weird.
Well,
you put it all together.
We're the
weirdest people there are.
I think that they tend to be very individual. Like, you know, like that we kind of have to be the weird ones, because if we're not willing to go with the crowd, with the mainstream, like you kind of have to have that mindset. You have to be a bit of a rebel, because 99% of people or more don't understand what we're talking about. Even ones that are invested or whatever are speculating. They got some Ethereum and Bitcoin and Litecoin and XRP, and it's sitting on Coinbase or whatever, but they don't understand what's happening. It's almost like that's almost like a worse path than, like, I don't know. It's like almost just more off base. Why,
it's part of the path, though. I don't know. Like,
it was for me. I mean, for me, I had to go through all kinds of nonsense to get where I'm at. Do you think the government will try to tax it eventually if it blows up, especially with custodial wallets?
Oh, yeah. Like, the government's always going to try to get its piece.
They're going to try.
Yeah, they're always going to try. They're going to fuck with the miners. They're going to try to, because they are. I mean, they're like trying to disguise it right now as like, it needs regulations. Like, no, it fucking doesn't. It never did. That's not the point. But the normies still want to regulate things, and they want their tax money, because who built the roads? They're going to come after us at some point.
The beautiful thing about Bitcoin is it's like there's so many ways to interact with it, right? Like, I'm not a big fan of Michael Saylor and all that nonsense. Like, I used to like him, but then somewhere he shifted for me and he started to feel really greedy. But the way I interact with Bitcoin, and I turn sunlight into sats, good luck trying to tax me. Like, I don't know. Like come
and take
it. Like, if you think you can figure it out, like, I don't have that much faith in our government, to be honest. And
they're not that smart.
I think,
have you seen the mail service?
Right. And there's way more of us than there is them. And even though we're small right now. So here's a question. Have you ever had anyone act hostile when, I know I have. I feel like people are very triggered. I try not to even say the word.
Yes. Yeah, that's actually what we do a lot in Value for Value. We've become afraid to mention the word Bitcoin, especially like if we tell new artists, like, when you're on Instagram, don't mention the word Bitcoin. That's going to shadow ban you. And I've had people look at me funny. I think that the kids think that Aunt Heather's crazy with the Bitcoin. Like, they mostly ignore me. But also, like, The younger kids in my family, that, you know, I've tried to help these kids tried to orange pill them, but they're into stocks because they, you know, like my niece's grandmother got
everyone's a trader now.
Yeah, everyone's a trader now, but she had a good experience with stocks because grandma had a good experience with stonks. And so she took that to mean that this is a smart investment. My kid has done the same thing where she bought a stock and the stock went up and I'm like, okay, let's talk about Bitcoin. She's like, well, I don't understand it. I don't know anything about it. And I'm like, okay, you got to learn. Okay, I'll teach you, but you got to learn. Like you got to put the effort in. And that age group is the one that needs it the most. And they don't know about it or kind of where to start. So I did teach my niece how to buy Bitcoin on Cash App because she had Cash App. And so that was a start. And kids are generally dickheads because they're like 22. They know everything. I am the cool aunt, but I'm not the cool aunt because I'm the old sober aunt. So I'm not drinking with them. I'm not smoking pot with them. I'm just talking about Bitcoin and the need for reading books and buying Bitcoin and being a spiritually fit and doing yoga. And they're like, she's a crazy cat lady. And, you know, like, why do I want to be like her? So I think we also have to have that. We have to set that example too. But no, I don't think anybody's been outright hostile, but I do get a lot of like, Bitcoin sucks, you're boiling the oceans, you know, why big? They think that you're a certain political persuasion too, you know, like they make a lot of assumptions.
I pick up on people's vibes pretty well, and it's just like you can just see their face kind of like shift, and it's maybe not super hostile, maybe I'm just a little overly sensitive, so it's like I take it as like hostile because I'm just like, dude, don't you know I'm trying to help you? And
sound crazy.
It's a trick, you know, because so many of us get into the space and it's like all we want to talk about. And now I'm like, now instead of starting a meetup called the Bitcoin meetup, I call it Freedom Tech Meetup. And Bitcoin is maybe down in the description hidden in there somewhere. But it's a trick. So let's see. Cryptocranium got back on and revised the question a little bit. What principles, not personalities, she brings to Bitcoin and Noster?
That's a good means? One. Yes, it's an AA thing.
Okay, I've heard it.
Personalities.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great question because we should have principles over personalities. And I think sometimes the personality does get into it. I see that. I've been on the receiving end of that for sure. But yeah, recovery, I think there's a lot of recovery people in Bitcoin. And there's a lot of recovery people in Noster too. And I think that that's an important thing to kind of like you're saying principles over personalities is, you know, we got to get, I don't know, people say first principles a lot. I don't know if I really know what that means. It sounds like business jargon. Cryptocranium says I've been recovered for 17 years. That's awesome. So, you know, like, recovery means being in a state of recovery from drugs and alcohol, which, you know, one of the opinions I have on that. So I've been sober. I haven't used drugs since 2001. I haven't used alcohol since 2013. So I consider myself recovered, but that is not the popular language in the recovery community because it is popular to say I am in recovery. So like, because a lot of I guess the predominant thinking in recovery is that I'm perpetually in recovery. I could always relapse and fuck up, right? So like I don't know how much I believe that. I worked in the addiction field. I've been sober a long time. I prefer to call myself recovered and give myself the credit. So if you go back to like principles versus personalities, we have to kind of remember in this space to like stay out of ego and keep the principle of freedom tech kind of like at the forefront and instead of like, because it's easy to be like, oh God, I want to push the idea of value for value so hard. But you know, the principle of it is really, we've got to meet people where they're at. And like, if I get really excited about value for value and want to just push it at any cost, then it turns into my ego and nobody gives a shit about that. So like, I think it's about doing trying to do things for the greater good of all involved and not, you know, for the principle of like, not principle, but like the principle is doing things for the good of everybody involved. and not trying to like get, you know, caught up in ego or what we want to make happen in this space.
I think that's beautiful, you know, regardless of what spiritual practice we kind of come from. Because I grew up around a lot of my, I had people around me that went to NA meetings, and I did see it very much as like, you know, I don't know, like a quest for understanding ourselves. And it's like a lot of the stuff I heard applies to everybody, you know, because we all have our attachments and quote unquote addictions or whatever. And it's interesting that you kind of said that bit about, you know, the unpopular language of being a recovered person. Because even as a child, I always heard individuals talking about being powerless. And that really didn't set well with me. Like, I always wanted to believe, like, I always want to believe that I can get better and transform and move on.
Right. And that because, was like, what's the point if you can't?
Right. And I think there's there's like lifers that are attending, and there's, I'm a big fan of like those groups. I think they help a lot of people, but some people I feel like get kind of stuck in this space of like, oh, well, like I can never be better. This is kind of who I am. And they're just constantly, you know, they're going to meetings every day of the week and they're drinking their coffee all day. And it's like, it's a beautiful thing, but I like to always think that we can like move on and like these are stepping stones and we can grow past those limitations. So I like that you kind of said that.
Yeah, because I what I've learned, unfortunately, working in the, we'll call it the addiction industry, because it is an industry. I learned that some people are just going to get sober. And for those people, that's going to be enough. And it's going to be more than enough for some people to just be like, I got sober. I am white knuckling it through this for whatever reason. Maybe it's their life story. Maybe it was a pretty bad addiction. You know, like some people, it's enough for them to get sober. They're not going to grow beyond that. But like, that's everything to them, that they can stop using and get on an even keel. White knuckle stay there, and maybe they manage to, you know, they get off the streets, they get a job, they get a place to live, maybe they even get into a relationship with somebody, and life is overall, you know, net positive. And you see this in the recovery community where like some people, they fucking skyrocket, like they do amazing. I've got a friend in recovery, he's sober 17 years. He's got like two companies. Like he's got like four jobs. He's raising his daughters on his own. He's amazing. And you know, like not everybody's going to be that guy. Some people are like, I'm still kind of an asshole and I know it, but I got a job and I'm contributing to society and I'm not doing dope. And that's as good as it's going to get. And I've learned this the hard way, because you look at people and you're like, but you could get better than just this, and they're just like, no, this is it. I am exhausted. Leave me alone. I just want to be sober. I just want to be perpetually in recovery, and I want to perpetually beat up on myself. Leave me alone.
I know for me, like in my healing journey, which isn't necessarily that route exactly, but it's still very similar. And I've learned that it's like, we can't save everybody. Everyone's having their own journey. So Cryptocranium says powerlessness is the first step, not all 12. I love that.
Right.
And Sprout asks, how is teaching yoga classes on Noster compared to in person for you in terms of value as well as the ability to connect with like-minded students?
Ooh, that's good. It's interesting. The like-minded angle is so good there. You know, cause it's, I love in person. I've always been big on like doing Reiki with people in person. Not to say that I don't love doing like distance Reiki, but I love the in-person thing. But if I'm going to teach yoga online, I think I probably much prefer the Noster crew, you know, because it's like, it's the mindset, you know, it's people who are doing the, you know, like Dan, or the Rupert Dammit, Nosshole, you guys, Dave and Anna, and like Tiggs, all the people who kind of regularly come in and out of the Yogastar class. It is a different mindset, you know, because you know you're dealing, I was talking with a friend about this today, about the mindset that my Bitcoin and Noster friends have versus the rest of the world. And it's such a different mindset than, and people in my in-person classes, they could be Bitcoiners and I just don't know, you know, they could be on Noster and I don't know, but the mindset's obviously different if I'm teaching at a luxury, you know, condo or apartment or whatever. than when I'm teaching on Noster. Like I feel like I'm with my people when I'm teaching on Noster, the people who like, they're going to get the joke or they're going to get the reference. And then I have to kind of have a different persona when I teach people here in town in person, because they don't know that there's this whole world that I'm in where I'm a Bitcoiner and I'm a Noster girl. And, you know, I hang out with all these people from all over the world and doing, you know, we're doing yoga on Noster. We had somebody come in the other night from Turkey. They couldn't sleep, and they came and did a yoga class with me and Dave and Anna and crew. And it was like, it was so cool, because it's like, where else can you have this experience, you know, where people come from all over the world and come to a yoga class? And it's kind of mind blowing. Where, you know, I go over to Scottsdale and I'm teaching a Scottsdale yoga class, which is, you know, the normie clientele. And, you know, I think I could go in there and teach like I'm going to teach a Scottsdale group of people. But usually I walk in there and I go, hey, like, what do you guys want to do tonight? You know, like, how do you want this yoga class to be? And then people are like, I want to relax and stretch. Or I've been trying to do arm balances and I don't know how to do these things. Can you help me with this? And then you can kind of like tailor it to people. And like, you know, maybe these people could be reached about the ideas that we talk about, like freedom tech or value for value. They haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. And speaking of which, you know, I feel like so amazed that how many people have come to be part of this. And I'm thinking about in the, mm-hmm. in the old world, like if I had a podcast for a few years a while back, and I don't even talk about it anymore. I've had a YouTube channel. And I've never had this many people come engage. I mean, I never did a live thing, but right? Just the fact that the tools exist, and we may be a small group, but it's a tight group. Like people mm-hmm. care about what you have to offer. And the fact that it's like free up front, and then it's like, hey, if you get any value from this, help me out and send some sats. You know, like there's something really yeah. magical about that. The whole way this thing is being built out, whether you're building software or offering a yoga practice or in the music space, it just gives me a lot of hope. You know, I did this thing and I really didn't know if anyone would show up to the live thing. And we've probably had 12 people come through and actually engage.
And I recognize them.
Yeah. And ask questions. And there's some new people too that I've clicked on the follow everyone button. So I probably have a couple new follows here. And it's really beautiful. And I just want to thank you all for showing up. And especially want to thank you, Heather, for offering your perspective on this stuff. I mean, it's been a really intriguing conversation for me. I've had a lot of fun and I feel like I've learned a bunch. And I'm really excited going forward to keep talking to people in the space. This is such a great start, and I really appreciate you helping me kick it off. Thanks for everyone that showed up to be part of it. I really appreciate it. It feels great.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks to everybody for showing up, and I'm looking forward to hearing all the future episodes, not the one that I'm on, but the future episodes of Beyond Bitcoin. It's going to be awesome.
And also, these two are putting on great yoga classes two different times. We got, was it Monday mornings and Thursday evenings?
Monday nights, Thursday mornings. Yeah, Monday nights at 5 o'clock Arizona time, which is currently the same as Pacific for the summer. And then Anna's is 6 o'clock Thursday mornings, again, Arizona time. So that for the early crowd or the Europeans can come.
Go do some yoga. It's good for everybody. It's a pretty powerful practice, and it's so much more than just movements. You know, it's a beautiful practice to help us understand ourselves and get in the body. And I'm just really excited about you guys building this space out here. It's super important, and I want to see more people be part of it. So.
Bring them in. You know, the more somebody like yourself and like Anna, you come in and like, now I'm not the only yoga teacher anymore. Now there's Anna too. And like Dave's coming in with a podcast, coming in hot. And, you know, the more people come in and, you know, make a podcast about the space, or, you know, go so far as like, we need more value for value podcasts to play the music. You know, we need more people, you know, writing about the stuff or posting videos on Noster or inviting a friend to Noster. And like, we just, and anytime somebody jumps in and starts bringing the magic like you guys are, like, it makes the space stronger. It grows the community. Everybody has a gift. Don't be shy. If you're not sharing your gift, you're stealing from us. Okay, that's anti-value for value. So come share your gifts. Whether it's art, you know, you got Dan. Dan does art wherever he went. I think he had to dump out because it's late there. But, you know, everybody's got something to offer. Even if it's just being a cool fan who's just like, cool, there's music. I can watch on Toonster and I can go zap it. Or I can listen on Wavelink. I can go zap it. Or somebody wrote something cool on Yaki Hone and I can go zap it. Like do it. Like, the more we interact with each other and make stuff and pay for other stuff, like, that's awesome.
I think that's a great point. I had an interaction on Noster not too long ago where this guy was talking about how he didn't feel like he was a creative. And the way I see it is, like, we're all creative. We all have art to offer. It's just shifting how you see what you have to offer. But anytime mm-hmm. we're kind of like coming from a passionate place and sharing something that we've put love and care into, we're offering something up. And that can also be just, you know, like, I feel like I'm so connected to music, but I generally just listen to it because I'm not that good at making it. But I feel like I appreciate it as well as anybody. And so there's a lot of ways to be artistic and creative is the point. And I think that's a big part of the shift we're experiencing is, like, we've been so programmed to kind of like work mindless jobs and give ourselves away. And it's time to get back to like giving our real selves to our fellow man and getting some value back for it. And I think you're just doing excellent work in the space to help us get there. I appreciate it.
Like, likewise to you and Anna both. You know, you guys are living off grid down there, mining with solar energy, just like doing the thing. And then like Anna's like, you know what? I'm going to teach yoga too. It's like, you're like, I'm going to do a podcast. And it's like, yes, you know, like, and this comes from just like, you know, every one of us showing up every day. And like, you know, you got Mark in the audience. Mark makes us memes, zaps, and comes to everybody's podcast. And it's like, dude, like, even if you're just, you're Mark and you're just showing up and you're supporting the space, like, that means a lot. Cause it's like, dude, Mark showed up. Like, it's a good day. You know, like, Mark gets on Noster and throws down some memes and zaps people. And it's like, dude, it's a good day. Like, it's just fun. Cause it's
value
just
value for
is.
Value.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Well, again, I want to appreciate, tell you all, I appreciate so much for showing up. Thanks, Heather. Thanks, Anna, for,
thanks for having me,
helping us put this together, and looking forward to doing a lot more of these. And if you are interested in being involved in somehow, and you got something you're offering in the Noster space, let's talk about it. That's what I'm here to do, is to connect with the other people that are making it happen. Until next time, Stack Sats. Stay humble. Keep building. Oh,